recorded KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, June 13th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gunavchish, Hawa Tuxknusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You may also join us on our live stream for a behind-the-scenes in-the-studio look over on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's YouTube, Instagram and Facebook pages. Today, it's Theater Day. We preview two upcoming summer performances. First, Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing is the summer offering from Theater Alaska, which begins later this month. And just in time for solstice, Insomniacs, a 24-hour play project from Juno Ghostlight Theater in collaboration with Perseverance Theater. It's happening next Saturday, June 21st, and you can participate. We'll find out how it all works. And Juno Audubon Society previews tomorrow's Birdwalk in partnership with Southeast Alaska Land Trust out at Sunny Point. Those conversations plus Our Living Lands coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. KTOO is raising membership funds in support of all the programming you depend on. If you have the capacity to give this June, we invite you to sign on as a new member or make an additional gift. All funds raised directly support the important work of keeping you informed, entertained, and connected. Give at ktoo.org. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on our live stream at KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram pages. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That's a little Shakespeare music for you to get you in the mood. Theater Alaska enters its fifth summer of theatrical productions in community spaces. And on the boards this year is William Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. It's a comedy about love, honor, deception, and it has, in my opinion, some of the best one-liners in all of Shakespeare. It opens on June 26th and runs for 3 weeks all over Juno. And today we are joined by the director as well as two of the cast members. One of them, most of you know in the audience out there, if you've attended theatrical productions at any point in Juno over the last number of years, Enrique Bravo is in the house. Good to the cheese, Enrique. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, John.
Excellent. And you're playing Benedict.
I am playing Benedict, yes.
Awesome. Okay. And then we have two guests from out of town. We have the director, Matt Huff. Welcome. Good to the cheese for being here.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Pleasure to have you here. And then I have Anna Becknell, who is playing one of the other leads, Hero. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Yeah, good to the cheese for being here. So I can't wait to get into it. We'll get into a little of your backgrounds as well. But first of all, Matt, for those who may not know Much Ado About Nothing. I think most people have heard of William Shakespeare, but Much Ado About Nothing, can you give us a reminder of a little bit of the story? Just set us up.
Sure. So Much Ado About Nothing is one of Shakespeare's most popular comedies. It sort of set the stage for the modern romantic comedy, and it follows two love stories, one of a younger couple, Hero and Claudio, who have just newly fallen in love, and the other love story is an older couple who have self-professed to hate each other. And when they meet, they, of course, spar and insult each other in this sort of merry war of wits, as people term it. But when they are tricked into believing that the other one actually loves the other, it totally changes their feelings towards each other. And of course, I won't give any spoiler alerts, but it's a romantic comedy, so everything ends happily.
Yeah, another Shakespeare play, really. All's well that ends well, probably, right? Yeah. Like it does, it probably ends okay.
Yeah.
But we have some conflict along the way, Anna, because there's some things that happen to you during the course of this play. Tell us a little bit about Hero's sort of story in this play that Matt set up for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So Hero really just gets kind of completely beat around all throughout the show emotionally. And because when they are trying to trick all of these other people into doing all of these different things, they entrap Hero. And they end up making up this fake scenario of her having an affair with somebody else, and then which ends up not being true. Sorry, spoiler alert. But then Claudio kind of shames her in front of everybody at the wedding. And so Hero is really just hit with a lot of, she doesn't really know what to do, and she's very new to this. She's new to love. She's new to confrontation. Like, the men just got back in town from being away at war, and so she's kind of, she goes through a lot in the show. It's definitely a lot of emotion, for sure.
That's cool, and I think it's funny because you both have mentioned giving it away. I think the play is over almost 400 years old or so I think we're okay.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because the story is sort of, it feels like almost the comedic version of Othello in some way, right? In terms of jealousy and right. making and trapping somebody and making them think one thing is happening and really it's not. And, you know, so it's kind of interesting that way that this then becomes, you know, sort of the funny version. And of course, it's kind of cool. And then Enrique, you're over here playing Benedict, the other couple in this play, who are sparring at each other. I have one of your lines pulled up because I just thought it was funny. I do love nothing in the world so well as you. Is not that strange?
Oh.
Right? Is that one still in this cutting? Do you still have that in there?
Yeah. It's in there? I guess that's not one of the lines that pops out to me as a funny line.
Oh, I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Maybe act better. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
But that's the first time that he tells Beatrice that he loves her. And so that is funny in the context
of what's actually happening.
Because the whole rest of the play, it's been like, I hate you. Because they have some really funny scenes, right? Like in terms of going back and forth. And who is your Beatrice in this production?
Natalia Spengler is Beatrice.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Natalia has been in, I think
she's done every Theater Alaska production.
Theater Alaska, at least summer production.
Yes.
Natalia is one of Juno's fine actors. Yeah. And so that's awesome that she's playing that with you. And who is your Claudio, Anna?
His name is Lake Bartlett. He's relatively new to theater, as I understand.
Okay.
He's a local college student.
Local college student. Okay, that's so interesting. And Matt, tell us a little bit about the casting for this production. You were probably back at work. We'll get into that, where you work and stuff, but you were probably not here in Juneau. How did you go about casting the production?
Well, with a lot of theater productions and film and TV, it's happening virtually. So we had actors submit video auditions. I was both in Atlanta and where I teach, but I'm on sabbatical this past semester, so I was in Japan part of the time.
Oh, nice.
Just traveling. So looking at video auditions and maybe a few live Zoom auditions is how we cast the show. And of course, Florentino has worked with a lot of these actors before, and he was very instrumental in helping recruit auditions and sort of steering me as to what actors would be great for what roles.
Yes, and Florentino is Florentino Lagandino, who's the artistic director of Theater Alaska, but he's also in this production. Looks like he's playing Don John. And we also have Scout James in the show, Caitlin O'Mealy, Brian Crowder, who's been in a bunch of recent productions at Theater Alaska. And then we also have James Patrick as Don Pedro, who is not such a good guy, huh?
Don John is the bad.
Oh, well, John is the bad one.
Yeah, is the bad one.
Yeah. Okay, I got my Dons mixed up.
Yeah.
They both are bad, in my opinion. And then we also have Roman. How do you say Roman's last name? Is it Mahanyu?
Mahanyu.
Okay. And I think that I gave everybody else. We mentioned Lake, and then Natalia. Okay. Yeah. And that's the cast, which is pretty awesome. So it's interesting because there's like local folks, and then we have new people like Anna, that's so cool. So what's it been like the first, you guys have been rehearsing for just a couple weeks because you're still a few weeks out from opening, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, so what's it been like so far? What's the process like?
Well, it's definitely been kind of surreal for me, specifically because I've never been to Alaska. And when Matt asked me to do the show, I immediately said yes. And then I got here and I was like, what did I just do? I can't believe I'm in Alaska. But honestly, it's been so worth it. The rehearsal process has been very interesting and very different for me because this is my first time working at a theater that kind of does different spaces of theater and like performing at different spaces. So it's been a good, for me, it's been able to help me grow my like learning to be flexible and kind of just going with the flow, especially because we're going to be moving around a lot. And so that's been really interesting. And everybody here has been very welcoming. So I'm really grateful.
And what's your history? I know you said you're, I don't know if we said this on air, but you're in college, right? Mm-hmm. Right now. And where do you go to college?
I'm a senior at Oglethorpe University.
Okay.
In Atlanta.
A senior at Oglethorpe University in Atlanta. Hotlanta, as we like to say, right? Especially this time of year, I bet. Oh, yeah. So is this your first time doing Shakespeare?
It is not.
Okay. So you've been studying Shakespeare in school as well, or you've been in some other productions. What are some of the other shows you've done that are Shakespeare-related?
When I was in high school in my hometown, Spartanburg, South Carolina, we had this kind of something similar to Theater Alaska. We had something called Scrappy Shakespeare, which was basically we went around and performed Shakespeare in different places of Spartanburg, and I ended up being an apprentice for that for a little while. And then COVID hit. And then in college, I was in one of Matt's shows. He directed The Tempest. And so that was really fun and exciting. And now I'm here.
Awesome. Okay. That's so cool. And Matt, you are a professor at Oglethorpe University.
Yes.
So you knew Anna.
I did, yes.
And you said she's perfect for this role.
Yes. Her and James Patrick, who's also a student at Oglethorpe.
Okay.
I was looking to cast some students, and both of them had just finished a study abroad in the UK, in London, together.
Oh, cool.
So I knew they'd be comfortable traveling and being away from home for a long period of time.
Yeah.
So, and they just fit our needs for the roles and had Shakespeare experience. So it was a perfect fit.
And have you directed in this kind of situation before where you're going to be moving spaces a lot? We'll talk about that a little bit more with Bravo here in a second. But in terms of going around different places, is that a challenge for you as a director?
Well, we haven't hit the performances yet, so right now that's all kind of theoretical for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. I will be here the first weekend. I will not be here the subsequent weekends. So yeah, that is totally new experience, and I'm interested to hear how they adapt our staging for the different spaces because they're all completely different from each other.
Yeah, I guess with just being at the second end of second week of rehearsal, you're still figuring things out for the play itself before the story, right? Figuring out character and all of that, which is kind of cool. So now this, I mentioned, is moving around. So it opens, the first weekend is June 26th. That's a Thursday, and it will be out at Treadwell Mine Office Building. And, of course, these productions are open to the public. There's no charge for these. That's Theater Alaska's mission, is to be doing these productions in community spaces that everyone can get to. That's very accessible. Now, Treadwell Mine may not be accessible for everybody, but then the following weeks they go to a bunch of different places. They're going to the senior homes, the Riverview Senior Living, Juno Pioneer Home, and then one of my favorite spaces that you all perform in is the Jensen Olsen Arboretum. That's always a fun day. Hopefully the weather's good. That's going to be on Saturday, July 5th. And just a note here for everybody out there making your plans, the 3rd and 4th, because of the holiday, there will be no performances. And I believe, Enrique, that for the Arboretum, in the past, they've had people have to sign up. That's the only one you have to sign up for.
It was a good accident, but the very first year we did it there, we actually had so many people that the cars lined up all down the street, and there was just too many people for the Arboretum to handle. So now they've limited how many people. So they should have a sign-up sheet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a sign-up sheet, and you can find out more at probably theateralaska.org. That's theater with an E-R. But the interesting thing is that it's still a lot of people. It's not like 50 seats. They can handle like 100 and something out there. So it's it's kind of good. And that's good. And then the last weekend will be a couple performances over at McPheeters Hall and then out at the Noise Pavilion out at UAS. And then the final performance is another awesome space, the Mendenhall Public Library. The Valley Library, that room up front in the library becomes a theater space, which is really kind of cool. And so, Enrique, you've been in a bunch of these productions. How is it working for you as an actor in terms of moving to the different spaces?
It's funny because last night we kind of got a little taste test as to how that works, because our actual rehearsal space was double booked by a drag performance.
Oh.
So we walked up the stairs and there was some drag rehearsal going on, and we found out that we were double booked. So we actually had to move to a house and rehearse in the living room.
Oh, wow.
So it's just like, this is a preview, guys, what's going to be like. And I personally really enjoy it because it kind of keeps it interesting and fun. It can give certain people anxiety because, you know, you want one thing to go one way. But I appreciate that you sort of always have to sort of be on your toes and figure something out. It's still a working piece, even when it comes to like entrances and exits. I mean, the ones outdoors are a little easier to handle, but when we have for instance, we're doing a lot of blogging right now for our for the Treadwell space, but that's obviously going to become an issue once we move past
the changes,
that space.
Because mm-hmm. that is such a specific space.
Exactly,
it has those windows.
It has those giant pillars that go right through the middle of it.
Yeah.
So we'll be able to use them while we're there. But I mean, we're gonna have to figure something else out when we're in these other spaces. But yeah, I love it personally.
Well, and like Anna, you were saying, like that's kind of a cool challenge, is to. Because I know, like Enrique is saying, sometimes certain people get locked into, oh, on this line, I move over here. And if that changes, it throws you off. Mm-hmm. So it really tests your focus, right, mm-hmm. as an actor. I think that's going to be really fun. I remember last summer I was in Pride and Prejudice with Theater Alaska. And when we performed, I think it was at the Pioneer Home, I felt really bad because
right.
I had to go off stage at one point. I was playing Mrs. Bennett, and at one point I scream when she finds out about the something happens, right? She screams. And unfortunately, there was a person, one of the seniors living there, was walking by right at that time. And I was like so sad because I had to do this scream, and she got scared. And she told me to get out, and you know, it was. And then somebody came and helped her, and said, "Oh no, they're doing a play and everything." But it really, like, kind of, you got to really be on your toes.
Yeah,
right?
There's been. I mean, you've seen the Treadwell space, or we've been out there. I mean, there's been dogs that have been coming in during a performance.
Yeah,
you know that type of theater, I just appreciate because it's so intimate. You know, I like to say you can't fake it from that close. You know, you really got to come bring the goods. But it also makes it a cool communal experience because everybody feels like we're all in it together.
Well, and the audience really enjoys it, I think, too, because there's no lighting and there's none of that theatrical conceit, really. And so, Matt, back to the show and your directing. What is your sort of style in terms of directing this play? Like, are you modernizing it? Are we setting it in the period? What's kind of, because usually sometimes with Shakespeare they do something to it to put it in the time and place now. Why now? Why are we doing this play?
Mm-hmm. Well, first let me say that in terms of the different performance spaces, I think it's probably more like performing the play in Shakespeare's time than it would be doing it in a traditional theater. So in that way, it's kind of exciting because just your relationship with the audience is so just right there with the sun shining down and everyone just kind of all together. There's no sort of separation necessarily between the cast and the audience per se.
Everybody's a groundling.
Exactly. With Shakespeare, you know, I think it depends on the design team and what you're all sort of kind of leaning towards in terms of updating it. Personally, I just love setting it in the, you know, Elizabethan time, and then you don't have to worry about making all those, you know, translations and mm-hmm. jumps of logic and mm-hmm. stuff. But for this show, we decided to update it a little bit, kind of giving it a 1945, right after, you know, World War II kind of look and feel. You know, that's a time when men were away. And at the beginning of this play, soldiers are coming back from some sort of war, not mm-hmm. really specified in the play, but we can assume that the men have been gone for a while. So they're leaving this war, and now they're ready to party and hook up and all that fun stuff. So giving it sort of a, you know, if this were to be in sort of a Western world, in the last 100 years, what might make sense? And that seemed to be what made the most sense. Also giving it a little bit of aesthetic distance and finding a time where gender roles were even more kind of well-defined than they are, you know, today, because mm-hmm. The play is very much about sexism and mm-hmm. and just the sort of the injustices of that. So we felt this time period would be a way to kind of give it a more contemporary look than the Elizabethan time, but also give it some distance and a nice period, fun costume design for the costume designer to work on as well.
Yeah.
And flesh out some of the themes of the play, too.
And how much time, I know with Shakespeare, the text and the language can be not only complicated for the audience to sort of get into, they always say it takes you like 5-10 minutes as an audience member, and then you sort of get it, right? You start to feel like you're in the world of the play. But in terms of the beginning of rehearsal, because here you are like 2 weeks in or so, do you start with a bunch of that text work in terms of figuring out the language, or are you getting up on your feet and moving around because that's really what, you know, comedy and the movement and space is going to be about? How do you work that out?
A little bit of both. This play, it's more verse in this, sorry, more prose in this play than verse. Mm-hmm. So that arguably could make it, you know, easier for some people to both understand and to listen to. It still can be a little sort of, you know, unusual for the ear initially, but it's a lot of everyday kind of prose. Initially, a lot of the jokes are clear and understood because it's not in sort of this verse structure. But I would say that typically, and feel free to pipe in, that the language and text work is ongoing. So you sort of start trying to, what are we saying? Why are we saying it? But it just goes deeper and deeper from there. It's never something that is easy and that you get used to with a Shakespeare play. It's always a work in progress, and if you start to relax with it, then it can become kind of sloppy and non-specific. So you constantly have to kind of work at it.
It sounds really fun. It sounds like it's going to be a wonderful production. Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, with a bunch of local wonderful actors, Enrique Bravo, Natalia Spangler, Floridalina Lagandino, and a bunch of others, Brian Crowder, and then our guest, Anna Becknell, who is from Atlanta. We're going to school in Atlanta from South Carolina. hold on to that home pride, right? And playing Hero, and Matt also here directing from Oglethorpe University. It opens on June 26th, and it runs for 3 weekends. No performances on July 3rd or 4th. You can get more information at theateralaska.org. You can find and read bios about all the cast. And I think you can follow, I think Theater Alaska is all over social media too. So if you're not following them on social media, I'm sure they'll be posting pictures from rehearsal as well as performances once they get started. Well, have a great summer. I hope the weather holds, because I know this last couple weeks of rain has been like, well, are we going to be outside in the rain, or what's going to be happening?
And that's the one that I really worry about is the Arboretum, because that's the only space we do not have coverage.
Yeah, like, no,
we've been
zero.
Lucky every year.
Yeah, every year. And last summer with Pride and Prejudice, we were lucky too. It was a really beautiful day out there. So, knock on wood, pray for all the good weather to be happening out there. Enrique Bravo, Matt Huff, Anna Becknell, thank you so much for coming in today. Gwyneth Cheesh for being here. Check out Theater Alaska at theateralaska.org. Gunchish. Okay, up next we have Our Living Lands, the weekly episode from Native Voice One. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The West is known for its spectacular outdoor recreation, but for Indigenous communities, access to activities like fly fishing has been difficult. Our Living Lands producer Daniel Spalding spoke to Tristan Chi, a Navajo filmmaker, about his new film documenting One Camp's work to change that.
Can you share a little bit about your film Rooted Waters and what inspired you to document the Indigenous and Hispanic youth fly fishing camp?
I myself grew up on the Navajo Reservation. I was in an area where water access was very limited. We had one close lake that was nearby, and you know, just grew up fishing with regular spin rods. But fly fishing was never that everyday activity that I didn't grow up with. So being able to be a part of this community here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, really led me to other people who are doing really great work, other leaders who are doing really great work in their area. And one of those was Indigenous and Hispanic Youth Fly Fishing Camp, which is led by another great leader from Santa Clara Pueblo, Vidal Gonzalez. That's how it all started, was, you know, for the community, by the community, and by someone who is of that community. And that's really the main reason why the story came about.
And so Rooted Waters showcases stunning footage of New Mexico's trout streams. What were some of the challenges and rewards of capturing these natural landscapes on film?
You know, the fly fishing film was primarily around the resources of water and where trout basically can live and adapt to. So we have been fishing these areas for, you know, quite a long time, and especially the Pueblo people. The way that I like to lead my storytelling is to know that these areas are ancestral homelands to a local tribe, and reaching out to the tribe and knowledge keepers there about areas that are special and sacred, and that should not be on film. And the physical filming of it was, you know, using cinematic grade cameras and drone footage, carrying gear in and out of these places. Sometimes the place we would hike into would be about, you know, a mile and a half long, and they would be easily about, you know, 1,000-foot elevation drop within that mile and gain up in that area. So it was pretty difficult, but it was also very fun.
What environmental shifts or climate-related changes did you observe while filming, you know, along the streams and the rivers in New Mexico?
When we were out there, we did see quite a lot, heard a lot, and felt a lot in our senses. And the biggest thing was pretty much the heat. The heat was, you know, super hot in moments where it should not have been. The waters are, you know, not the way they used to be. The levels aren't the way they used to be. And the trout aren't really in the areas where they used to be as well. But we were still, you know, catching them. There is still water out here, which is we're grateful for. And trees are still here. It really instills that conservation mindset into these kids and into ourselves of, you know, we need to protect these landscapes more than the way we have been.
How do you see fly fishing and outdoor education as tools for building climate resilience and environmental awareness among Indigenous and Latino youth?
Yeah. So amongst our communities, we, you know, don't really have a lot of accessibility to the outdoors. And I think the thing about this camp and what it provides is that it really provides knowledge, cultural and traditional knowledge of generations. And the camp also includes elders of these communities to come out to speak on traditional and cultural knowledge of these places we're fishing at, and to, you know, talk about how important it is to take care of Mother Earth, how important it is to take care of the things around you and treat things with respect, and also, you know, give offerings, because what we're doing there is, you know, we're extracting, we're in their environment, and, you know, we've got to leave it better than the way we left it.
What role do you believe storytelling, you know, especially through film, can play in advancing climate action and preserving sacred waters for future generations?
The thing about this is that storytelling and filmmaking go, you know, they coincide, they work together. And to make a really great story is to have someone and something connected in that relation who are wanting to protect, wanting to build something in order to protect, in order to thrive, in order to be resilient.
That was Treston Chi, director of Rooted Waters, which premiered on May 23rd, 2025 at the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansengress.com/careers.
Yeah, This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on the live stream behind the scenes in the studio on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Saturday, June 21st, Juno Ghostlight Theater and Perseverance Theater present Insomniacs, a 24-hour original play event. What exactly is a 24-hour original play and why is it called Insomniacs? Well, I've got reps from both theaters here to explain it all for us. From Juno Ghostlight Theater, I have Hedy Laverne. Gunathchi Shwasiti, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Awesome. And from Perseverance Theater, I have Kylie Ferguson. Gunathchi, how are you?
Sheesh, thank you for having me here.
Yeah, it's so good. So, what is a 24-hour play? Does it mean it's 24 hours long?
Oh, gosh, no.
I don't know if we'd have an audience for that.
Yeah, that'd be hard to sell tickets for. This is an event where one-act plays are being written and rehearsed and produced all in 24 hours.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're starting the night before. So on the 20th, we will gather and we are going to pick a theme to inspire the writers. We have no idea what that theme is yet. We'll pull it out of a hat on the day.
Mm-hmm.
That way it's all spontaneous. And then the writers are going to go and they are going to write all night. They have until 7 a.m. to turn in their original one-act play.
Run on caffeine.
Yes, there's a lot of caffeine involved. And then the director and their group of actors will get the script, and they rehearse all day, and then they put it up that night.
And it's a one-night-only thing.
Yes.
One night only.
Okay. Well, it's really interesting because I know there's a lot of solstice parties and different things happening on Saturday, and so this is one of the many events that is going on around town. But and then I was looking into it, and technically the solstice is technically the night before, on June 20th at like, I don't know, I can't remember what it said on the interwebs, but it was telling me when it was, and I was like, but it's like the solstice, but it's the between those dates,
mm-hmm.
right? It's
yeah.
between that time. But what I liked about that was that the writers, having to stay up all night, they can just leave the windows up and
yep.
it'll probably be bright. Or it'll feel a little bit like you're writing in the olden days when you had just a little bit of light to write by.
Putting out a candle.
Of course, probably by the light of their computer too or whatnot. So that's really cool. So it's all done within the span of 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what time are you meeting on Friday night?
We meet at 7 and we're pulling the theme at 8 o'clock. So give
okay.
them time. The writers get to know their actors. If the actors can come, they get to ask them if they have any special skills, if there's any memorization nerves that maybe not give them a monologue to do.
Right.
And just kind of getting to know their cast so that they can potentially write to them, which allows them to showcase their talents, which
is
cool.
We get to set everyone up for success.
That's the
Now,
hope.
I have done these in the past, and I will say that the writers who write a monologue are evil
mm-hmm.
because
yes, of course.
The actor
mm-hmm.
only has like the morning really because then they have to start running the show and putting tech in and doing
yeah.
all these different things. And so don't write a one-page monologue for somebody.
That's right. We do encourage the writers to refrain from monologue work.
Short sentences,
yes.
you know, that's kind of fun. And this has been a project that Juno Ghostlight has done before,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, it used to be our one event before we were able to get back to doing full-length productions, and we would do it every year. And the last time we did it was 2019, and we were gearing up to do it in 2020, and so we haven't been able to do it since the pandemic. And we're bringing it back, and we're partnering with Perseverance.
Because did it used to be called the 24-Hour Miracle Plays?
At one point, it was called that.
Yeah.
It switched to Insomniacs, I believe, in either 2017 or 2018.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's been that name for a while, but it's been like 5 years since we've been able to have
mm-hmm.
this. Okay. And so just for funsies, what kind of themes did we have in those previous years that you gave to the writers? Can you remember?
Yeah, I can remember some of them. One time, the first time time I was involved as a writer, my theme was the kindness of strangers.
Okay.
And that was a fun theme. And what's great about it is, like, writers take it from so many different perspectives of what that could mean, because somehow mine ended up being in the belly of a whale. And I don't know how, but it did. And other people had it be actual neighbors and people coming in. And then we did one year where it was called, the theme was just far afield.
Okay.
And that went in many directions. And I'm blanking on what we've done most recently, but oh, wait, the last time we did this in 2019, it was a cruise ship full of nightmares.
Oh my, yeah, that must have been fun.
That was
now
fun.
How do you decide what to put in the hat that you're going to pick out? Who writes all those out?
Typically, we ask the directors to do it. So the people who have signed up to direct, they will come up with a theme. I believe we'll do it that way this year, but we might have board members from both theaters do it. Mm-hmm. It can really just be anybody, but usually you have about four or five to choose from, and then you just pull it from a hat, and whatever it is goes.
That's kind of cool. Okay, so new this year is this collaboration with Perseverance Theater, this co-pro with it. How did you all get involved, Kylie?
Yeah, I would say we just really love partnering with some of our community organizations. Juno Ghostlight produces great work. It's been really great to partner with y'all in the past for different staged readings. And for us, at least during the summer, other than our star program, we slow down a little bit, enjoy the sunshine. But we have the space, we have props, we have scenic. Like, we have all the stuff. We love doing a quick pop-up event.
So is this going to be, it'll be in the main stage area?
Yeah.
And will it have lights and all that kind of stuff?
Yep.
Whoa, all done in one day.
We're hoping.
It will. I promise it's going to happen.
Well, Teddy's very confident. I am waiting to be impressed.
Well, it starts at 7 o'clock that night? On the 21st, Saturday, June 21st at 7 o'clock. And just for information and stuff, where do people find out more? Is it a ticketed event? How do we get information on that?
It is. Because of the fact that it is a one-day event and everything, we want to fill the house as much as possible. So the tickets are only $10. Mm-hmm. We try to keep it affordable. And those can be found on our website, junoghostlight.com. They can also get them at the door. It's a big theater, so I'm sure we won't sell out in advance. So that's good.
Well, I'm not going to sleep on it like I did for your last production, Five Women Wearing the Same Dress, which was completely sold out the whole run, which was awesome. And yes, Perseverance, a little bit bigger space, but with only it being one day, people got to get in there and make it happen. So that's kind of cool. So let's talk a little bit about who's involved and is there still opportunity for people to get involved? So tell me who's involved so far, like directors and stuff and writers.
Yeah. So we have four teams, four writers, four directors. I hope I don't blank on anybody, but we've got Dave Hunsiger as a writer. We have Amanda Breslow. We have Marianne Call. We have Trip Krause. Those are our writers.
Okay.
And then for our directors, we have Tai Yamaoka. We have Wendy Burns, Karen Allen, and we have Jake Wade.
Oh, awesome. That's what a crew.
Yeah.
We're really excited.
That's kind of fun. And I'm really excited because I didn't know Marianne Call was writing plays.
Well, see, that's what we love about this event is it's a great opportunity for people to try something new. So even if you write poetry is your strong suit, we're giving people opportunity to try a different type of writing. So we have people who do write, but not necessarily just playwrights. And then a couple of our directors, this is their first time directing. They've acted before and they want to try directing. So this is kind of their first attempt.
But it's also nice because Karen, who runs Theater Latitude 58, so more collaboration there, obviously, which is kind of cool. And it's interesting, just going back to Marianne for a second, Marianne Call, as many people know, is a local singer-songwriter, does wonders for the music world in Juneau and beyond, the whole state of Alaska, really. I wonder, is she going to put a song in there?
You know, we might try to team her up with some actors who sing.
Yeah.
That is something that we always look at, is what are the strengths of our writers, our directors, our actors? Let's see if we can team them with people who might elevate that. So it's possible. We've had music in the past. it has mm-hmm. happened, so it might happen again.
It might be kind of fun to see that. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see what happens. But it's also, like you said, it could be just Marion wanting to say, hey, I write lyrics, maybe try my hand at writing a play, which yeah. is kind of cool. So now those are set. The directors and writers yes. are set, but there's room for actors still?
There yeah. is. We will take actors up until the day of the 20th, not the 21st, because it'll all be written by then. But we will take them up until that day. We have a pretty big list so far, which is lovely. A lot of enthusiasm. And then we are also still accepting people who don't necessarily want to be on the stage but want to help. We need crew. Mm. So people who are willing to run around town and find props. Maybe something Perseverance doesn't have in their prop room. Maybe build some props. We've had to build really silly things in the past because what's being written is being written when people are tired. So a lot of times what comes out of it can be very funny and silly and kind of maybe dreamlike. So yeah, sometimes things need to be made. So we're still looking for crew. There are a few people signed up, but we can always use more help.
Absolutely. And how do people do that? Where do they go to?
They can send us an email at info@junoghostlight.com.
Okay, info@junoghostlight.com. If you're interested in being an actor or on the crew, and of course, you can also find information and tickets at both websites, junoghostlight.com as well as perseverancetheater.com, yeah?
Yep, if you want to take the long route.
Because it's probably a link to junoghostlight.com,
yes,
which is really cool. And so, Kylie, what are you just producing? Or are you going to be acting? What are you going to be doing?
Oh, goodness. I think I'm helping on the support side. I'm going to be running around the theater with all of our other crew, looking for props, diving into scenic, and probably discovering new areas of the theater, I'm sure.
I'm imagining that Saturday, because everybody has to show up at what time in the morning? What time do they show up?
Between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m.
Wonderful time for theater people.
We're offering some breakfast options and coffee, but we want to make sure that people are there no later than 8 a.m. so that they can start their table read.
Right, they got to get going because mm-hmm. they got to yep. perform that night.
Yes, they do.
Yep.
And they're off book,
yep.
They're memorized, there's yeah. tech involved,
yep.
there's all mm-hmm. kinds of things happening. What a really cool project. What a fun thing to do. What a great way to celebrate solstice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and I do love the fact that you said that the writers get into like a dreamy state because
yeah.
I can imagine at like 4 a.m. when they're still trying to figure out the ending,
mm-hmm.
You know, what I imagine what comes to them and be like, you know what? I'm just going to write it and they'll have to figure it out.
Yep, that's exactly it. One thing, too, that audiences can look forward to is these are one acts and there's four of them. So we start at 7. We'll probably be out no later than 8:30. You can still go enjoy the sun.
Right.
So we're even though you're going to be in a theater, you'll still get to have your sun in the evening.
Absolutely. Cool. This is a great way to start your solstice mm-hmm. partying
yeah,
on that Saturday, June 21st. It's the Insomniacs, the 24-hour original play event. It's happening next Saturday night, June 21st. At 7 p.m. at Perseverance Theater. It's a co-pro between Juno Ghostlight Theater and Perseverance. And you can find out more and get information and tickets at junoghostlight.com. Or, as Kylie said, if you want to take the long way and you have Perseverance in your bookmarks, you can hit that first and then find Juno Ghostlight. I'm going to cheese for being here today. I really appreciate it. Break a leg. I can't wait to see these plays. They're always so fun.
Yay!
Woo!
This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. Up next, we'll talk with the Juno Audubon Society about tomorrow's walk in collaboration with the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. And, of course, first, we have to play a little bird note.
This is Bird Note. These are the freakish snarls of the oil bird, which spends its whole life in the dark. These birds live in caves in Trinidad and South America and fly out at night to search for food. The oil bird is adapted to this lifestyle. It uses echolocation, like a bat, to find its way in the pitch black of its cave. And the birds have excellent night vision, rivaling that of an owl's, to help them forage after dark. Fossils suggest that the oil bird diverged from other bird families more than 50 million years ago. It has no close living relatives. The oil bird isn't black, as its name might suggest. It's actually a rich brown with large white spots. It has a hooked beak like a hawk, but it's not a meat eater. The oil bird lives on tree fruit, especially palm nuts and avocados, which it finds thanks to its keen sense of smell. This diet, rich in fat and oils, leads to plump chicks and the name oil bird. In fact, humans used to boil down the birds to make oil. For Bird Note, I'm Ashley Ahern.
Support comes from Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, with outdoor clothing, gear, and footwear for the whole family. Now carrying women's workwear from Dovetail and Aloe Yoga Pants. Located in the Mendenhall Mall and online at nuggetoutfitter.com.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I've got Brenda Wright in the studio from Juno Audubon right now with me for a preview of tomorrow's Bird Walk at Sunny Point, which is in collaboration with the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. Gunath Cheesh, Ha'igudi, thank you, Brenda. It's good to see you again. Wasiati, how are you this fine Thursday?
It's great.
It's a Friday. What am I talking about?
I've had sunshine in my eyes today, so it's a perfect day already.
I know. I think it was Wednesday we had that beautiful day, and then yesterday it was kind of okay, and then today is a little bit nicer. Are you hoping that this sticks for tomorrow? What's the report?
It's supposed to be nice tomorrow.
Okay. We never know in Juno, though, do we?
Nope.
Can
nope.
Change at the last second. So this is going to be out at Sunny Point. It's in collaboration with Southeast Alaska Land Trust, and it's at 9 a.m.
Right.
So it's a little bit later. Mm-hmm. It's not at 8, so it's at 9 a.m. And where do people meet you to get started for this walk?
Well, we're going to meet at the cul-de-sac end. That means the farthest away from the underpass.
Okay.
There's a little tiny parking lot on that end. But we want to go because Seal Trust is our partner that have been helping us for so many years by allowing us to put our tree swallow boxes on the property that they maintain and keep take care of for the refuge.
Mm.
And without them, we have 40 boxes on their properties.
Whoa.
And they're the happiest places that we have because they're almost always 18 of them have nests.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. It's just the perfect buggy place to live.
Wow. I love that. And how long is the walk tomorrow?
Well, you know, we're going to go all the way around the point because after we get to talk about the tree swallows and everything that's there, there's actually quite an interesting selection of other things that live along the fringe there.
Okay.
Because it is the wetlands and a tree line and also a little bit of a higher piece of ground. We can always look for not only just the sparrows that live in the grasslands, but also flycatchers that live along the edge and a lot of other birds that like edge habitat.
Edge habitat. What kind of birds are those?
Well, for one thing, like it's the snipe. They like the high grass, but they also like to nest in places that have a little bit more safetiness. Mm-hmm. And then the yellow legs live there too. So they're the ones that stride around trying to get those big insects or the little tiny fish out of the streams.
Mm-hmm.
But the most of the sparrows are all seed eaters.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But swallows like bugs, and who could not like a bird that eats bugs?
Yes, please take away the bugs. Is there other things that you see along the way around Sunny Point?
Yes, actually, it's quite an interesting place because of its location in the refuge and between properties and flowing water. There's a place where the bears often cross, and also the otters. And so, you know, a lot of times as we're walking around the one end of the point or the other, we're looking at a lot of different trails in the sand and the mud of all these different animals that traverse that area.
I wonder if you run across some like bear scat, do you like get like do you kind of start a little bit and be like, oh, wait a minute, we better be on the lookout.
Yeah, yeah. No, actually, the nicest thing about Sunny Point is the grass doesn't get over your head there.
Uh-huh.
So if you look around and you see a big brown spot moving towards you, you know what it is.
You kind of say, okay, we got to take a left
yeah,
turn.
Yeah, that's all. There's 20 of us hanging together.
Yeah, yeah, right? That's so fun. And who's leading the walk tomorrow?
Well, it's me and also Marcia Squires.
Okay.
We're expecting at least 20 people. And so it's nice to be able to talk quietly while we're trying to also observe the birds.
Nice.
So we break them into smaller groups.
You know what? I haven't thought about that. Like, but you got to not disturb the birds, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yep,
when you
yep.
get a larger group, everyone has to be sort of
yeah.
on their toes a little bit, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. So, you know, it's the kind of thing where you can't bring a dog because they might chase things that you'd like to see. And you want to have people being a little bit quieter so you can hear the bird songs and look to see where they are. So it's a kind of thing where you're all in a group together trying to see similar things.
Now, Brenda, you have been a bird watcher for how many years?
Well, you know, I really started out as a flower watcher because they don't run away as soon as you look at them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But after a while, the birds just captivated me because they're just so beautiful and they have so many different sounds and so many different things that they do just for life.
Now, as a new bird watcher, somebody who was getting into it, I'm curious, like, how long it took your ear to get trained to when you're I know we were talking about this last week with your guest, too, mm-hmm. like that you have the cool app. But, mm-hmm. like, before you had the app, how long did you take to train your ear to be like, oh, that's a snipe, that's a this thing, and that's a that?
I really, truly am envious of people with good musical talent.
Yeah.
Because I have to relearn the bird songs in the spring, usually.
Oh, interesting.
Because,
okay.
But it's so nice. The juncos start, they live with us all year round, and they start singing in February, and they're the only ones. So I go, I'm sure, I'm positive that's a junco.
Right. So now after many years, you're like, okay, that I got.
That I got.
Because it's about timing of the year, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing which birds may be here at that point.
Right.
And then sort of like process of elimination a little bit.
Yes, though. Indeed. Because, you know, there's some birds that pass through so quickly here, you don't get to hear them actually sing much at all.
Mm.
They come here and chow down until they can't hardly move and fly away again because they have a lot more energy to keep traveling. But if the ones that are coming here, they're a little tired too when they first get here. But when they first start singing, they're really, really interested in getting their territory set. So they are saying, mine, this is mine here.
Is that why they sing like that?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I thought maybe, isn't it also partly mating calls?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You can't attract the lady unless you have a beautiful sound.
That's funny. And so Juno Audubon Society, you do these summer walks. There's one more left, right?
Right, right.
And that's going to be next week?
Yes, it is. And it's going to be at Dredge Lakes. And it's going to be Deb Rudis and Kari Monagle are going to be leading that one. And the fun thing about that is, you know, we can't promise anything. But it is time for the new arrivals.
Mm.
So there are ducklings of different kinds.
Oh, interesting.
There's a few birds that are starting to fledge. And so you recognize them right away because they don't fly very well or they can't do a U-turn.
Interesting.
And they'll sit on a branch and just scream for food even though they can fly.
So that's going to be the last one. And then you come back in the fall with some programming or what
yes.
happens next after the
but,
walks?
You know, usually we try to do at least one low tide walk also.
Okay.
Because we have, well, lots of people who are interested in low
yeah.
tides.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to find one that's a fairly decent hour of the day.
Mm.
And then we try to go up the tram too at least once.
Okay. And that'll be later in the summer mm-hmm. then maybe. Okay.
And sometimes in August or September we get to do mushrooms.
Nice. Mushrooms are coming up. And the best way to follow that is through the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Facebook and our webpage.
And the webpage, JunoAudubon.org,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And you have it's a redesigned website. It's been up for about a year now, which is kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
It has an events tab which you update.
Mm-hmm.
But people can follow on Facebook, yeah.
Right, right. And one thing for sure on the front page of the webpage now is a calendar. So if you can't figure out for sure if it's a birding event or just an event, you can check the calendar.
Ah, okay. That's awesome. That's really great. So again, this walk is happening tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's in collaboration with Southeast Alaska Land Trust. They also do really something cool when we do litter free.
Yes.
Right. They do a whole pickup of Sunny mm-hmm. Point. So mm-hmm. this is the benefit of that, right?
Right.
Which is you're
yes.
going to get to see a beautiful Sunny Point mm-hmm. For this bird walk tomorrow. And it's going to be from 9. Well, I guess you have to be there at 9
right, yeah,
to start the walk because you don't want to catch up.
But, you know, out there in the grasslands, you'll see us out there in the distance. So if you want to try to catch us, you can.
You could, yeah. Don't scare the birds.
Don't scare the birds.
And it's free of charge.
Yes.
It's offered by the Juneau Audubon Society. And do you have to register or you just show up?
Yeah, no, they did set up a registration on the Seal Alaska Trust webpage.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. And I think that's sealtrust.org
yeah.
is their website. Then mm-hmm. you can go and sign up for the walk yeah. tomorrow because right. it's in collaboration with them. And,
right.
And that other person that you're walking with, they're from?
Marcia Squires.
Yeah.
And she lives on Douglas, but she's not too far away from us.
I see. Okay. I got you. Awesome. Awesome. So that is happening tomorrow, June 14th from 9 to 11. And then the last walk will be on June 21st. But we'll have a little bit of visit with you next week to find out about that final one and maybe some other things that are coming up later in the summer. You can find out more at JuneauAudubon.org or go to SoutheastAlaskaLandTrust.org. And find out more information. Brenda, thanks so much for coming in today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
All right. This is Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. That will do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. Go out and make it a beautiful day. Juneau Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juneau 104.3 and KAUK Juneau Auk Bay. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JuneauAfternoon where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juneau Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Alaska Airlines, Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. KTOO Arts and Culture Team, this is a project of that. Juneau Afternoon, I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program with help today from Lisa Purvis. Good cheese!